All right, so this is in us all, but we're going to talk about how we end up with this superhero power to imagine somebody and have a conversation with somebody and you know, rate somebody in our mind alone, not the real person, just in our mind, and how that's necessary and how we do that in a healthy way. And when that gets broken, you now understanding what's broken can lead to you not taking things personal. And that's important, to remain calm and to get rid of the hysteria in your day-to-day life. All right, here we go. Introjects and internal versus external objects. This is going to be a head trip, but you really need to know this. All right, in the realm of psychology, I hate this shit, by the way. I hate forensic psychology in the family court system. So in the realm of psychology, the concept of introjects, the real psychology, clinical psychology, it plays a significant role. That's a hold on. Let me do this because I got to get a clean scrub here of this reading. I can't be talking like this. Getting a little hysterical. Hold on. I'm going to turn this music down just a little bit because I got to focus myself a little bit more. Here we go. There we go. All right. Here we go. All the way through. Short little article, short little blog here. Couple commentary pieces and we're done. Introjects and internal versus external objects. In the realm of psychology, the concept of introjects plays a significant role in understanding how individuals internalize and replicate external influences within their psyche, your brain, you know, your imagination. Introjects are essentially the internalized representations of external objects, which can be people, experiences, or any impactful external entity. Notice I just external versus internal. It's a big deal. These internalized objects can have a profound impact on an individual's mental and emotional landscape, shaping their self-perception, how you look at yourself, and interactions with the world around them. Dr. Craig Childress and these are my two favorite dudes here, and Professor Sam Vaknin have extensively explored the dynamics, yes they have, of introjects and their implications on human behavior. I love looking at human behavior. It's predictable. It's boring. Once it becomes boring, you know you're on to something. According to their theories, introjects can be both positive and negative. Positive introjects often stem from nurturing and supportive external objects. Are you starting to see? I'm getting ready to explain this, but I'm trying to get it to unfold kind of organically. Contributing to a healthy and balanced self-image. Conversely, negative introjects arise from a harmful or traumatic experience or experiences and can lead to a distorted self-perception and maladaptive behaviors. Now, again, the only reason us dads are looking at this stuff and getting all complicated is because we found out it affects our children. So we want to know which bolt to turn a little bit left, which bolt to turn a little bit right, because we don't want this to shape our children's personalities for the rest of their lives. All right, the distinction between internal and external objects is crucial in this context. External objects are the tangible entities. Anything like you, you're an external object. You're real. You're uncontrollable. Remember this. You're uncontrollable. So the tangible entities and experiences encountered in the external world, while internal objects are the mental representations or sculptures, you're doing it. It's your by your hand alone of these encounters. For instance, a child who grows up with a loving parent internalizes this positive external object, which then becomes an introject, meaning it's basically you've created a little AI character in your brain and you've got him filed away or her filed away and you could pull them up at any time. That fosters a sense of security and self-worth. On the other hand, a child exposed to neglect, could be a rich family that just neglects their children. It doesn't have to be a poor family or a single parent environment. So a child is exposed to neglect or abuse may internalize, not all children do this, we're all different, and God only knows, and he figured all this out, and he's written the script, in my opinion, may internalize these negative external objects, resulting in introjects that perpetuate feelings of inadequacy and fear. Can you imagine going into marriage, not understanding this, and having these feelings come out of nowhere, and you don't even know why? These internal objects, once formed, significantly influence an individual's psychological framework about everything, by the way. They serve as reference points for interpreting new experiences and guiding behavior, how you interact with experiences. A person with predominantly positive introjects is likely to approach life with confidence and resilience, while someone with a preponderance of negative introjects from their childhood, we'll get there, may struggle with self-doubt and anxiety. They will struggle with it. Understanding the formation and impact of introjects, I'm going to change that to will, is essential for addressing psychological issues and fostering personal growth. Through therapeutic interventions, individuals can work to reframe negative introjects and cultivate healthier internal objects, ultimately leading to improved mental well-being and more fulfilling interactions with the external world. Yeah, they'll be able to be critical thinkers and not be duped and all that good stuff. The concept of dead mother and the impact on the human brain. Now, I'm using mother here not because I'm biased towards mother versus father. You could have a dead father, absolutely. But I'm talking about the first 3 years of a child's life. The mother is so critical. I mean, that's the nipple. That's the warmth. That's the, all of a sudden, the first realizing that the source of food and nurture and warmth and shelter can be external. This child has known nothing except an internal embryonic fluid sac that has protected it from sound, vibration, muffled everything to a controllable state. And it is mother that represents his portal or her portal to the external world, which this child knows nothing about at this point. All right. The term dead mother, coined by psychoanalyst. Did you know that there was psychoanalyst out there? Yeah. Andre Green describes a caregiver who, by the way, if anyone knows, like that little check mark above the E, I'd like to know how that changes my enunciation of that name. That would be great to know. All right, Dr. Childress emphasizes that children look to their primary caregiver. They look to their primary caregiver for emotional attunement, kind of what I just now talked about, and validation. When a caregiver, often the mother, usually the mother, is emotionally unavailable because they're out doing their own career, they're being a boss babe or whatever. See the poison that's self-cyclical? It's self-cyclical. It's going in a spiral like a tornado of destruction. All this bull crap this wokeism has created and feminism. It disrupts the child's ability to form secure attachments. Bottom line, this emotional detachment can lead the child to internalize feelings of rejection and worthlessness, which are then projected onto their self-concept. You see, when my children are alienating me, cutting me off, they're cutting a part of their self off, half of their self. I am half of them. They are half of me, you know? And you'll see what I'm talking about. So here it can lead the child into internalizing feelings of rejection and worthlessness, which are then projected onto their self-concept. Consequently, this internalization fosters the creation, this is the big one, you Google this, a false self, a facade developed to cope with emotional neglect. We're going to get into this later, not now, but listen, this is what's happening. The child can't handle this mom that they've been given in life. They don't know how to survive with this mom. Oh my God. So what do? They create a false self that can have superpower abilities, that can shrewdly compete with mother at any time, is always better than mother. You get it? You see what's happening? And then it becomes welded into their psyche, into their personality. This is where these haughty, narcissistic, self-entitled, they can't help it. They've used this to survive. This is what I'm trying to tell you. All right. Professor Vaknin further explores the ramifications of having a dead mother by examining the child's defense mechanisms, which I just described. That's a defense mechanism. Thank God it's there. The child would become a nutcase by the age of two, wouldn't even make it. He notes that children in such environments often resort to splitting, which we've already talked about, a psychological process where the child compartmentalizes their experiences. Hold on, I need to take a drink of water. Into the all good, the black and white. That's why you're an whole and mom is can do no wrong right now. It's the splitting, the black and white. You are deemed bad, black. Mom is all good, halo, white, pure, holy. You get it. This mechanism is a way to manage the conflicting emotions. This is called cognitive dissonance. It's a terrible state of mind to be in. The conflicting, because it's subconscious, you don't even, and it makes you feel all these weird ways. Because you're denying, it's even in scripture, you know, just natural human affection. You're going against the primordial, biological, emotional from ancient ancestry. The wiring of how your soul works. This is anti that, which puts you in a state of, oh my God, this is a Twilight Zone psychotic horror movie that I'm stuck in. So as he's exploring this, this mechanism is a way to manage the conflicting emotions elicited by the unresponsive caregiver. So the child, your wife, when she was young, she was not getting the attention from mother, and mother was erratic and bouncing around, more concerned with mother's life, mother's needs, mother's feelings being met, and not family. Do you understand? From the ages to 1 to 3, oh my gosh, critical. 3 to 10, another, oh my, critical. That forms your child's personality, their decision-making abilities, and what they choose as far as solutions. Are they going to cut people off at just a little drop? Black and white people? Oh, you're bad from one little thing, and then don't talk to them for a year. Think about experiences with your ex or the mother of your children. Has this happened? Have you said to yourself, how can she do that to a friend or to a family member? Don't judge her. Man, you do other things that are just as bad. We're just looking at this logically as men, trying to figure out how to save our kids. All right, so let's get into this false self. I'm going to read through this, and we're going to be done, and you can take the quiz. I was going to go through the quiz. It's my best quiz I put together. You ought to check it out. So, the false self as a defense mechanism. Let's go through this. The concept of the, you know, this is kind of why I think whenever I would say in my relationship, man, you're acting fake. Oh my gosh, that would send the other party up to the moon. It was like such a big insult, and I never got it until, you know, a couple years ago. I was like, oh, I get it now. The concept of the false self, and I don't judge her for this. No, and I might not even be right. Who am I? I'm just a peanut brain. The concept of the false self, as explored by Dr. Craig Childress and Professor Sam Vaknin, serves as a crucial defense mechanism that individuals develop to shield themselves from emotional pain and rejection, to compete with their dead mother. The psychological construct manifests as an artificial persona. They start creating another. We all do this, by the way. Remember, you've heard the statements, the world is a stage and we're all actors, all that stuff. So consciously or unconsciously, this persona is crafted to present a facade of normalcy. In other words, to fit in, competence. You know what's going on. You get what's going on in the world. The false self aims to meet societal expectations and gain acceptance because you didn't get it from mama. You had a dead mother, thereby protecting the individual from the feeling of inadequacy and vulnerability. Listen, guys, often I remind men that your ex that is alienating your children, she is often doing this because she will die. She feels like she will die if she is not validated, okay, and gets approval and all of that. All right, one of the primary characteristics of the false self is its ability to be subtle and maintain a veneer of stability and capability in social situations. This is why your support group or your wife's support group that's never spoke to you, maybe a church, maybe whatever, a country club, I don't know, a business setting, that's why they're so jaded and twisted. So one of the primary characteristics is to maintain the veneer. This facade allows individuals to navigate complex social dynamics without exposing their true selves, which they don't even know who they are, to potential criticism. Oh my God, they can't handle any criticism. Think, is this your wife? Or judgment? Hell no, they can't. They fall apart. You might even find that as you've gone along in your marriage, you started against your better judgment, like, you know, not criticizing them as much as you think they need it. You know what I mean? Just because they take it so hard. All right. So by projecting confidence and emotional resilience, the false self helps individuals avoid the discomfort associated with their perceived flaws and insecurities. Dr. Childress emphasizes that this mechanism is often rooted in early development, like I've been saying. All right. So let's get to this part here. However, the resilience on a false self is not without significant drawbacks. No kidding. Professor Vaughton highlights the overdependence on this construct can lead to profound loss of authenticity. This is why you should start feeling compassion for this person that's doing this to you and your children. Because it's not harming you so much as your children, both of your children. When individuals habitually suppress their true emotions and desire to maintain the facade, they may experience a growing sense of disconnection from their real person. This is what's happened, by the way, gentlemen. That's why you don't recognize this person anymore, your wife, the mother of your children. It's like, who is this? And it is with caution that you should, like, find out. This disconnection can result in increased emotional distress as the individual struggles to reconcile their public persona with their private identity. How sad. Moreover, the false self can create a cycle of emotional strain about every 6 to 7 years. If you look back on your relationship, you've kept it together about every 6 to 7 years. They've wanted to run or explode and blow the whole family up. Think about it. So it becomes increasingly taxing. The constant vigilance required to maintain the false self, they're going through this. Feel sorry for them a little bit. Compassion can deplete emotional resources, leading to heightened anxiety and stress. In extreme cases, this can accumulate in a crisis of identity, where the individual feels trapped by the very mechanisms intended to protect them. Understanding the dynamics of the false self as a defense mechanism is crucial for fostering emotional well-being. By recognizing the signs of false self and exploring the underlying causes, individuals can begin to dismantle the facade and work towards a more authentic and fulfilling existence. This is for the 30%. This is the 30% that becomes self-aware. It's so scary. Can you see why? Oh my gosh. I have great admiration for the 30% that made it through this. Oh man, that's kudos, respect. And for the ones that didn't, you know, the 70 that didn't, I don't judge them a bit. I don't know if I could have done it. This is one of the big admirations that I had about my wife is I watched her. You know, she came from a poor family, a welfare mother that was very much into herself and neglected her and her sisters. I mean, terrible, bad. It was bad, bad, bad. And I saw her take care of her sister and try to create a home atmosphere. You know, I still admire that about her. That's very good. Anyways, guys, take the quiz. Ladies, if you think that you're experiencing some of these tendencies, remember, this is not an all black or white. You're not just like a narcissist or a borderline or an alienator. These are, you know, you can do it a little bit or a lot. Just be honest with yourself. That's all I suggest. All right. If there's no one showing up because it's the 4th of July and I'm getting ready to go and light my pool on fire. All right. Happy 4th. Enjoy your family. I hope you got a lot out of this. I hope I get a good podcast recording, which other people can learn from, and it sounds good. And daughters, I love you so much. I think you're all awesome, to be honest. I do. I can give you reasons why. But later. All right. Happy 4th. Be safe, guys. Enjoy your little ones. Enjoy the friends around you. Families, where you find it. See you manana. Thanks for watching. Bye-bye.